Coming up on Tech News Today, Jeff Bezos buys the Washington Post. Not just an issue, he bought the whole newspaper company. Also, Amazon gets into fine art, and Comcast goes rogue on copyright enforcement. All that and more coming up.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Tech News Today for Tuesday, August 6, 2013. Tech News Today is brought to you by Shutterstock.com. With over 26 million high-quality stock photos, illustrations, vectors, and video clips, Shutterstock helps you take your creative projects to the next level. For 30% off your new account, go to Shutterstock.com and use offer code TNT8. And by ProXPN. ProXPN is a virtual private network that allows you to use the internet the way it should be, anonymously and without oversight. For 20% off your new account, go to proxpn.com/twit and use the code TNT. Welcome to Tech News Today. I'm Tom Merritt.
I'm Sarah Lane.
I'm Aya Zachter.
And I'm Chad Johnson.
And Jason Howell will be off for one more day, but we're still going to carry on without him. Chad's here. We're good. We're solid. We got a great guest coming up, Sharif Sark from Engadget. Let's get to the top 10 stories of the day in the News Fuse. The Washington Post Company announced yesterday it will sell the Washington Post newspaper, several local newspapers, and Comprint Printing to Jeff Bezos for $250 million. The remaining bits of the Post Company, such as Salon.com, Kaplan Test Prep, and Foreign Policy Magazine, will continue separately under the Washington Post Company, which will get a new name. Bezos will become the sole private owner of the Washington Post newspaper and said in a memo that publisher Catherine Weymouth and the entire staff will remain in place. No layoffs are planned.
After reports that a third-party iPhone charger caused a Chinese woman's fatal electrocution, Apple has launched a trade-in program designed to get official USB power adapters to more customers. If a user suspects their charger to be faulty, Apple will dispose of it and for $10 provide a new official adapter. The promotion runs through October 18th.
After the news hit that there was a vulnerability in the Tor browser bundle that compromises privacy, the Tor project is telling people to stop using Windows and disable JavaScript to get your privacy back. The Tor project says the attack code is Windows-specific, even though the Tor browser bundle for Firefox vulnerability is cross-platform. The Tor project says in the future, the Tor browser bundle will have an easier interface so you can configure JavaScript settings.
A new Nielsen study showed a statistically significant causal influence, not correlated, between a spike in Twitter commentary about a TV show and a spike in TuneIn. Nielsen found that the volume of tweets caused statistically significant changes in live TV ratings among 29% of the episodes they studied from prime time, though the study didn't state how much that increase was.
IBM has formed a new development alliance with Google, NVIDIA, motherboard maker Tyan, and others in an effort to reverse the dominance that Intel has in server processors and open up the power chip's innovations to the whole world. In the company's words, the move will make, quote, power hardware and software available to open development for the first time, as well as making power IP licensable to others, greatly expanding the ecosystem of innovators on the platform.
Samsung announced that it is now mass-producing the industry's first 3D vertical NAND flash memory. Now, why is this a big deal? Well, vertical NAND gets around a density barrier. By using a 3D cell structure, Samsung is capable of cramming more memory on a single chip. The structure also allows for improved reliability and speed. Samsung hasn't announced which devices will take advantage of vertical NAND just yet.
MVNOs are having a big day. Freedom Pop, for one, announced its first Wi-Fi hotspot for Sprint's LTE network. Freedom Pop will sell the device for $150. And if you don't know, they do a normal thing of 500 megabytes for free. That'll be 500 megabytes of free LTE data on this device. Also, TextNow, a Wi-Fi-based calling and text app, is kind of becoming an MVNO, selling 500 megabytes of data, 750 minutes of outgoing calls, and unlimited incoming calls and texts for $18.99 a month. The service will work also with Sprint's network when Wi-Fi isn't available.
Undated documents reviewed by Reuters show that a U.S. Drug Enforcement Administration unit is funneling information from intelligence intercepts, wiretaps, informants, and a massive database of telephone records to authorities across the nation to help them launch criminal investigations of Americans, and then concealing how such investigations start, concealing them from lawyers to prosecutors to judges. Federal agents are reportedly trained to recreate the trial and cover up where the real information originated, a practice that some experts say violates a defendant's constitutional rights to a fair trial.
Wisconsin network engineer Brenda Kohler has filed a lawsuit against Indian firm Infosys for violating the Civil Rights Act of 1964. Kohler alleges Infosys hired a Bangladeshi worker on an H-1B visa for a VMware Windows Administration position instead of her. Kohler is a VMware certified person with a master's degree in information systems and 17 years of experience. Her suit seeks class action status, alleging 90% of Infosys's 15,000 U.S. employees are foreign workers. Infosys denied the accusation, stating the company is an equal opportunity employer.
Stop the presses, Jeff Bezos. A report from Variety says that Comcast is currently working on a new anti-piracy scheme. When a customer would download a work illegally, a pop-up message would appear with legal ways to purchase the same content from Comcast or a third party. Variety says Comcast is in preliminary discussions with content companies and other ISPs to bring this new method into being.
But it's Variety. Bezos bought the Post.
Well, he could report that they reported it. That's all.
Yeah, he said he's not going to. By the way, just as a side note, he said he's not going to quit his day job. He's going to stay out of that.
Oh, much. Good.
We'll talk about that some more. This episode of Tech News Today brought to you by Shutterstock.com. With over 26 million high-quality stock photos, you're going to find the one that you need for your project. Shutterstock has that. They have 10,000 new images coming in every day. Every time you'll find something new. Many contributors to Shutterstock are professional photographers and artists, and Shutterstock reviews each image for quality. That's the thing about Shutterstock. You get a great search engine. You can search by things like emotion, color temperature, and then you know you've got a great pool of quality content to choose from. It's just not all comers. It's a good way to find the stock photos you need. They also have videos. They have vector illustrations. They have video clips. And flexible pricing. That's the part I love. You can choose individual image packs or a monthly subscription for the best deal. I use it for It's a Thing, which is seasonal, so I don't always need to be paying for a lot of these things. That's when I love Shutterstock's flexible pricing. They give you the images you need. They give you a light box so you can share it with your folks and say, hey, do you like this image for this post? Do you like this image for this project, this flyer? Do you think this will work? Go try it out. Sign up for a free account. You don't even need a credit card to do that. Just start an account. Begin using Shutterstock. Help imagine what your next project could be. Create one of those light box. Do some collaborations. Review the images. And then once you get to purchasing, use this offer code TNT8 and new accounts will receive 30% off any package. That's Shutterstock.com for 30% off new accounts. Use offer code TNT8. And we thank Shutterstock for their support of Tech News Today. Joining us now for our roundtable discussion, Sharif Sark, senior European editor from Engadget, back on the show. Good to have you back, man. How you been?
Yeah, very well. Thank you. Thanks for having me on again.
Thanks for joining us. Let's start off talking about Mr. Jeff Stop the Presses Bezos buying the Washington Post. As I mentioned in the news fuse, he's getting part of the Washington Post company. He's buying the Washington Post newspaper. That's kind of the jewel of what he's buying. He's picking up a few other things in here. And Alex Wilhelm over at TechCrunch kind of tried to do a little reading of the tea leaves to figure out how well the newspaper has been doing as part of the Washington Post company. And he estimates without legacy pension expenses, which, by the way, those pension expenses stay with the Washington Post company. Bezos doesn't have to take those on, that the Post is in pretty good financial shape. Bezos said there would be change with or without new ownership, but the key thing I hope people will take away from this is that the values of the Post do not need changing. The duty of the paper is to the readers, not the owners. The chairman of the Post company, Donald Graham, part of the Graham family that's owned the Washington Post for 80 years, sat down with a Washington Post reporter on their video channel and had this to say about Bezos.
He didn't do this impulsively. He did this after thinking for a couple of months. And I believe he will do just what he says in his message to employees. Come in, experiment, and see what works.
Is he buying the paper?
That all sounds reassuring. He's saying, I'm not going to change the staff. Obviously, we're going to experiment, but changes were going to happen whether I bought this company or not. I'm really committed to journalism. On the other hand, Amazon's been under a lot of controversy. Which Jeff Bezos runs Amazon. We know Amazon doesn't own the Washington Post. But they've been under a lot of controversy for not paying employees well, hiring part-time employees instead of full-time employees to keep those expenses down, classifying people as warehouse employees when maybe they should be retail employees in Europe. Sharif, is this Bezos writing as a savior of journalism, or is this bad news for the Washington Post?
My default reaction is like to be scared. You know, tech billionaires, an increasing number of them, with lots of money, and often a whimsical nature to them by the fact that they probably had a startup to begin with. You know, buying established newspapers, that makes me worried. Even though, as the clip there showed, it said he didn't do this on a whim. He thought about it for a couple of months. But for a family that's owned it for 80 years, I'm sorry, but a couple of months is still a whim. My default is to be worried because you just don't know what kind of philosophy they're kind of going to bring to it. And journalism is a distinct thing. On the other hand, some of the language used here has been that Bezos used specifically. Obviously someone would have looked over it for him, maybe helped him craft it, but it showed sensitivity and awareness, and yeah, it was kind of reassuring. The idea that you start with the readers and work backwards and that you experiment. I mean, who could argue with that?
Yeah, I feel like he said exactly everything I would want to hear. I think there's just always when a new owner comes in, especially when there's been somebody like the Grahams who are beloved at the Washington Post, you just don't know whether to trust them or not. They can say whatever they want at the beginning and then a year down the road change their mind. But the other part here is that the Washington Post is now privately owned. They aren't under the pressures of being a publicly owned company and having to deal with those short-term quarterly income reports that the Washington Post company had to deal with. Grahams and Bezos are, by all accounts, friends. It may be that Grahams said, look, we don't have the resources to continue this. We can't afford to take it private. Jeff Bezos, I trust you to do this. Will you do it? Maybe that time he took away to think about this was Bezos deciding whether he wanted to take this on or not.
Yeah, we've seen with Amazon that Bezos thinks long term, not quarter to quarter. And the newspaper business has been on the decline for years. Everything moving online, a lot of places shuttering their doors. But I just wonder if Bezos is just being sentimental. There was this weird thing. We had this love affair with BlackBerry. It influenced the original design of the Kindle. He was looking into buying it for Amazon by BlackBerry. Maybe he just likes the Washington Post. He's like, I don't want this paper going out of business. I'm just going to go buy it. It's $250 million. He seems to have money just sitting around. It's just odd that it's Bezos buying it and not Amazon, because Amazon probably could have all this content synergy nonsense. But Bezos owning it alone makes it seem like it's going to be an independent party and it's going to be doing lots of deals with other companies.
It would be surprising to me if Amazon did not at some point take advantage of the fact that Jeff Bezos owns the Washington Post. I mean, the Washington Post selling for $250 million, and there was a lot of talk yesterday like, well, Zynga's worth more than that, and Zynga's the butt of lots of jokes, and it's not that much money anymore for somebody like Jeff Bezos, who just simply has the money to buy something like that, although it is a respected property. And so in that sense, especially if the staff, at least right now, is going to stay intact because everyone believes in them, it'll be interesting to see at what point Amazon might offer some sort of, hey, if you're an Amazon Prime member, you want original content, they would be able to offer content, original content that is of high quality, not just products that are of high quality, and how that might all bundle into the Amazon experience going down the road.
Do you think it's significant that it wasn't Amazon? Do you think he would have tried to pitch this to the board at Amazon and say, this makes sense? They didn't see it, and then he went ahead with it anyway. I got to say, I prefer the idea of the individual owning it than Amazon owning it, just in terms of all the potential conflicts of interest that come along when you have this major retailer owning it. But I worry about this thing, that this idea of stealth, that gradually there could be creep where Amazon has a commercial interest in this relationship, even though it's Bezos technically at the helm.
Yeah, and I don't think Amazon was ever considered to be the potential acquirer here. And what I haven't been able to find a clear indication of is whether it's Bezos Expeditions, which is Jeff Bezos' investment arm. They're the one trying to recover Apollo 11 from the sea. They're the one creating a spacecraft. They're the one funding the clock of the long now. Did they buy the Washington Post, or is it just Jeff Bezos the individual? From all accounts, it's just Jeff Bezos, the individual, which makes me think this is Bezos, almost like Sarah said, buying something because he loves it. He just is a fan of the Washington Post and wanted to make sure that it stayed in good hands. And the Grahams persuaded him to do that. But You can that could 100% be his mindset right now, and that mindset could change over time. We'll just have to wait and see. Amazon also in the news on its own for becoming an art marketplace. You can buy everything there.
Yeah, so the Amazon Art Marketplace is a new area of Amazon that's giving users like us access to up to 40,000 pieces of fine art from over 150 dealers and galleries. Now, it's rolling out right now. You can certainly look at art that's on Amazon right now, but the company says it'll have over 4,500 artists, individual artists at launch, which puts Amazon as one of the largest online collections of art in the world. The company says it wants to demystify the world of art by giving users a gallery experience while browsing collections of paintings and photos and prints. You're looking at Monet right now, which is listed as unavailable. We're not sure if that's just because
it's sold.
It's not quite ready to be sold yet or if somebody snatched it up. But Chad, if you go through the photos there, it's kind of funny. It'll show you Monet in detail. Oh, this is what this little piece looks like. This is how the Monet might look in your apartment, you know, next to your cool chair and, you know, your little nightstand. Oh, I guess it's not really loading very quickly. So you know, it's kind of funny to, you know, that you're browsing through Amazon saying, would that Monet look nice on that one wall that we don't have anything on? Yeah, let's figure
know.
That
Two
out.
Two and a half million, honey. Is it worth it?
Yeah, I like that. Yeah, that looks pretty good. Sure, we should buy it. You know, there's stuff that's an Andy Warhol piece that's about 200,000, which is still too rich for my blood. But they have photography and just a variety of art at a variety of price points. You can filter your search by subject and color and size and price. I guess at this point, I mean, I'm excited about this because I really like browsing art on the internet, whether it's photography or, you know, something that someone painted or you know, some sort of a, you know, interesting multimedia piece. But I wonder how many of us are actually going to take advantage of this. I mean, is this just Amazon saying, well, if there are art websites around the world where people are making money off of selling them, let's just do the same thing. We're Amazon. Sharif, are you going to be buying art on Amazon?
Me personally, probably not. But I've got to say, I do see the rationale here. My wife runs restaurants. And, you know, a big part of her job is to go into, say, a restaurant that's been bought and think about how can we revamp this place and invest in it. And she's always looking for art. So for her, I mean, it wouldn't be these $200,000 Chairman Mao paintings as such, which are just generally off-putting, even aside from the price. But it would be sort of the $500 sort of price point. And, you know, for someone in business who wants really interesting pieces and who wants to make a statement, sure, why not? Why not sell it? I mean, the word Amazon is becoming synonymous with retail. Why not say we're going to do this on the premium, the high margin stuff too? And I'm sure there's interesting margins here for Amazon. I'm sure that, you know, they've thought it through.
I want to be able to upload my own living room there, though, because it's the same chair and vase in every one of those living room pictures there. Yeah, but I agree with you, Sharif. Why not do this? I mean, Amazon, like you say, I when I check a price on something, I go to Amazon because I assume that they're going to have the most accurate range of what something's actually selling for, as well as the listed retail prices. And there are things for hundreds of dollars in there. So if you are not a multimillionaire, you still potentially could buy some decent art. And like Sarah said, great to just page around in there.
Yeah, these crazy... Well,
It gives, you know, last week we talked about fab.com doing a bit of a pivot and saying we want to be like a global one-stop marketplace for fine goods, which makes it feel more like Amazon. But then how does a site like that differentiate itself? Because at least Fab up until this point was very, you know, kind of creative, design-based. And when Amazon gets into this space, there's just even less of an incentive to care about anybody else besides Amazon because they've got it all.
I think the last time I said Fab doesn't have a chance compared to Amazon. Amazon does things like this. These price points for these items make me think that this is more like a test for Amazon. I'm just kind of curious what other items they could sell at these price points. Cars, houses. I mean, if Amazon literally has everything you need at some point, including these like ridiculously priced pieces of art, if you can go to Amazon to check out cars or nationalize that or have a different, like I guess a worldwide marketplace for housing, would be a very interesting thing for Amazon because they seem to be doing everything anyway. I don't think this would be my add-on item to get free shipping, but I think this could be pretty big.
Customers who bought these socks also bought Monet. That's some expensive socks.
Because they have
right?
Monet.
Just to say, devil's advocate, though. Sure. Since we're all kind of for this. I mean, you know, in a sense, the question is, where's the limit? Where will Amazon, you know, push too far and then regret it? The limit, I think, comes from the presentation. It's very sparse, and it lacks any mystique whatsoever, right? So I'm all for reducing the mysticism around art. But if you take it too far, you actually devalue it. You know, it's got to be some prestige left in some areas. Otherwise, you undermine the value of what you're selling. So, you know, there comes a point where a really expensive painting put on this sort of, well, you know, Amazon storefront, which hasn't been changed at all, and is like in stock or out of stock, which is kind of meaningless anyway, you've actually just said, you know, it's kind of ridiculous to sell it for this much. You've kind of, you know, taken it down to the essentials, and the essentials aren't maybe as valuable as everyone thought.
That's a really good point. I mean, this is the definition of the commoditization of art, which is a big deal for a lot of critics, and it reduces it to you know, a mechanical buying process, which is probably extremely offensive to some people who are lovers in the art world. Let's talk about Comcast. The six strikes rule in the U.S. has proved to be pretty much like forgotten. Everybody forgets that's even implemented. Hadopi is being wound down in France. But Comcast has an idea to revive the fight against copyright infringement.
Yeah, it's an interesting idea. So Variety's reporting that Comcast has a new method to fight piracy. The system works like this. Let's say you're downloading something on a P2P system illegally. A pop-up message shows up on your desktop saying, here are links to buy the same content. It could take you to Comcast VOD system, a distributor's broadband network, or third-party sites like Amazon or iTunes or wherever. Now, Variety's in preliminary discussions to see if this can happen with these TV studios and other ISPs to see if this is something that can be real. According to Variety, while Comcast is a part of the Center for Copyright Information, this is not a CCI initiative, and this system would be a complement to that six strike system, the copyright alert system. It is not going to replace it. It would just be an alternative that you'd see as you were using this. Under the new plan, the ISPs would not get a cut of revenue derived from the transaction. So if you buy stuff, the ISPs don't get anything with that. And Variety says that Comcast engineers haven't formally begun work on this kind of system yet, but the project is being worked on in tandem with engineers at NBC Universal, obviously their content arm. Sharif, do you think this is something that ISPs can get behind, this idea that, hey, look, you can just buy this stuff legally, and that will that actually help curtail piracy?
The thing is, ISPs have to do something, and if they're going to do something, then it may as well be something worthwhile, and this actually smacks of something worthwhile. I mean, there's a limit to what they can do. But if the technology is there, I mean, I'm slightly worried that they're kind of looking for the PR, the good PR, before the project is real. I mean, if it isn't, if there aren't engineers working on it already, then we're kind of just talking hypothetically. But, you know, let's talk hypothetically. It is something that an ISP can do. Therefore, they should be doing it. And, I mean, ultimately, I agree with the fundamental philosophy. The reason a lot of piracy happens is because the prices are either too high or there's too many hurdles to jump through. It's not a deliberate act of wanting to have it free necessarily. And so showing people may actually make a difference, for sure.
I think that the problem here isn't that they're trying to show you there's a legal alternative when there is a legal alternative. I think that's great. I agree with the philosophy behind it. The problem is you are still putting the ISP and some independent company in the position of judge and jury over what is and is not illegal content. What if I'm showing or downloading or offering for download something that is in fact public domain and Comcast database is out of date or it doesn't know and something gets pushed in there to try to drive me to purchase this otherwise free thing from somebody else, and it confuses people. That's just advertising. Now, Comcast has said, we're not going to take referral fees out of this, and I think that's smart for them to say, look, we're not doing this for profit. But on the other hand, like, I don't see the evidence why this kind of thing will actually reduce piracy. And I do see ways in which it can go wrong because these companies are notorious for misidentifying things. So you're going to get all kinds of pop-ups in weird places happening out there with the number of internet users. I just don't think this is a battle that needs to be fought this way. I think actually providing the legal content in a timely manner to people is the best way to combat it. But Sharif's right. If the ISPs are in a position where they feel like they have to do something and they are in that position, this is probably one of the better ideas I've heard.
I'd like something that also integrated rentals. I mean, maybe that's just not, it was not spelled out. But, you know, when if I'm going to be watching something and it's by illegal means and there's a pop-up for me to buy that content, I mean, chances are I don't really want to buy it. I just want to watch it once. So maybe if they can give me more options, I'd be more inclined to say yes, just as long as it's easy. One click, you know, rental for $4, I'm there.
And even if this doesn't come to fruition, I would like a system like this, something similar to canistream.it, that could actually have all of the content if you're searching for it. Because when you do a Google search, I was doing this the other day, I wanted to watch a movie, wasn't available on Netflix, wasn't available on iTunes for rental. I had to actually order a disc because I didn't want to steal it. I mean, this is crazy, but this idea that if Comcast is going to bother to do this system, they could just make it another service and say, hey, you want to find it legally? We have a directory for you. Here it is. I would love to find that and use that.
Yeah, and canistream.it is a great one for that sort of thing. I use that one all the time. Well, actually, our sponsor for today's show, our other sponsor, is a great way to stop this from being an issue for you. ProXPN is a VPN provider. It stops people from looking at your traffic, so they have no idea what you're looking for. And that's the way the internet's supposed to work. You go on the internet, you find things. It's nobody else's business unless you want it to be. ProXPN is a global virtual private network, works with almost any internet connection, and it creates a secure 512-bit encrypted tunnel, which all of your online data passes back and forth through. Any online application can work with ProXPN, your web browser, your email, your file sharing, your instant messaging programs. ProXPN keeps everything you do online hidden from those prying eyes, disguises your physical location, and gives you unfettered access to any website or online service, no matter where you live or travel to. This is especially good if you're using a public hotspot of any kind, airports, hotels, cafes, any other situation you could think of. It's very simple these days for people to sniff that traffic and find out things about you, find out what you're sharing on Facebook or Twitter, all of that stuff, even get passwords. So if you use VPN, you protect yourself better against that sort of thing. Steve Gibson from our own Security Now gave it a great review on Security Now. So go to proxpn.com/twit. For more information and to sign up, ProXPN premium accounts are normally $9.95 a month or $74.95 for an entire year, but we've got a special offer. Use the code TNT and receive 20% off for the lifetime of your account. The lifetime, 20% off. Use that code TNT. That's less than $5 a month on the yearly plan. And if you're not satisfied, you can cancel within 7 days for a full refund. So go to proxpn.com/twit, sign up with the code TNT. Protect yourself. And we thank ProXPN for their support of Tech News Today. Onward into the Nielsen studies. As we mentioned in News Fuse, Twitter makes people watch more TV.
Yeah, but not all the time, Tom. And that's why Twitter kind of has its work cut out for it to convince ad executives to spend more money promoting television on Twitter. So yeah, an increase in Twitter commentary about a TV show increases the viewership of that same show as it airs live sometimes, says Nielsen. This is according to a survey that it conducted of broadcast primetime programming. Heavy tweeting could cause significant changes, but then there are other examples. Sharknado is a recent one where even though there was a very high tweet factor, you know, trending topic, the whole thing, the ratings did not reflect that. So there's a little bit of a, well, what does it all mean? Now, in general, Nielsen says that TV companies can take away if there is something that is generating a lot of activity and conversation on Twitter, even if that helps the ratings bump up a little bit, that can be very significant because networks are spending quite a bit. And obviously advertisers are spending quite a bit to give to the networks in order to get their products seen by as many people as possible. And Nielsen also says, interestingly, that Twitter seems to be best at boosting ratings for reality shows. Doesn't specify how much better than, say, a sporting event or something else. So the takeaway is kind of vague. Twitter helps Nielsen sometimes, but it's really hard to quantify how. So my question to everybody is, well, if Twitter wants ad executives to take it very seriously as a place to spend money, how does it do so when all we see is a somewhat vague trend happening here? Sharif, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, you have to be really cautious with these statistics because, I mean, you could have had the headline, Twitter barely impacts ratings, and the statistics would have supported that just the same. So, you know, I'm inclined to start from the other side and say, look, if there was a real correlation, then the stats here would be stronger and they would be able to tell us by how much, you know, how important it was. The fact that we kind of find a minority influence here, like 29% of instances, there's a connection between Twitter mentions and a ratings increase. If it was a real thing, a stronger thing, we would be seeing that, right? So I'm kind of skeptical from the outset. That said, my second concern is, what does this mean? And for example, does this mean, let's say it's true, do they want to encourage ad guys to like invest in sponsored tweets and so on? And because there's another gap in the logic. I just don't believe those things. I don't follow those things. You know, Twitter traffic is organic. That's one of the beautiful things about Twitter. You cannot influence it with sponsored tweets. So in other words, even if it was true, I don't see exactly where it goes in terms of action.
And the study says both things. It says that big live events and big viewed events cause more tweets, as well as more tweets, therefore, sometimes cause more viewing. I think this is a very small step in putting together the social media picture that Nielsen's obviously trying to get some press around, and it's working. But all it's saying is we knew that lots of people are on Twitter for really popular things, but we didn't know if there was a causative effect, if it was just like, well, it's popular and that's why it's happening. Is it just correlated? Nielsen's saying, no, it looks like it actually in some cases is causative. Mm-hmm. You actually can have a bunch of people on Twitter drive people to television. The fact that it ever happens at all, I think, is significant, but it's very easy to overinterpret that significance because, like you said, it's only 29% of the time. But we weren't sure that it was really happening at all, and now we have some evidence. It's another brick in that wall of information.
I think the only action that could be taken is by the television companies and things to actually have like a hashtag that's standardized, because I know a lot of TV shows have been putting at the top right corner or top left corner like hashtag whatever, and so that is the thing,
AOL that keyword, right?
That way people can actually track the trends, because otherwise people are coming up with ridiculous hashtags. So theoretically, maybe, I mean, hashtag Sharknado probably worked really well, and you don't even have to watch the show to make fun of such a title. But if you don't have a standardized hashtag, that's the thing that's probably not helping Twitter have real statistics to go, hey, look, we actually do make a serious impact or not, because the hashtags are voluntary. You pick what you want. So you probably don't get the same amount of data if you had them standardized.
OMG Pop, makers of Draw Something, was a big deal when Zynga acquired them, and now they are obliterated from the map. They're gone, gone, gone.
Yeah, they're gone. And sources are telling TechCrunch that OMG Pop, the team that was left from OMG Pop, was attempting to buy back any intellectual property it could from Zynga. So they were trying to get the domain name, they're trying to get the site back, the games that they could get, even if it didn't include Draw Something. Some employees even offered to work on omgpop.com for free. Now, Zynga told the OMG people that it would be legally too difficult to take the pieces of OMG Pop out of Zynga and sell them to the remaining people. Then Zynga laid off OMG Pop's employees, then announced omgpop.com, which shut down on September 30th, and then a number of games will also shut down on August 29th. Which that doesn't include Draw Something and its sequel. Now, TechCrunch is guessing that if OMG Pop, the people behind it, were successful with the IP after acquisition, it would expose Zynga as a mess. Sharif, is that a good enough reason for Zynga to kill OMG Pop?
Well, I'm inclined to believe conspiracy theories like that just because of all the other news about Zynga and the turmoil there. You know, they are on, I mean, they're in some sort of damage limitation exercise. So, yeah, maybe they would sort of cut their nose off to make their face look less ugly. I'm not sure how I can spin that particular. But you see what I mean? I can believe it. I mean, someone give me a reason to believe that Zynga has a future.
I was under the impression that OMG Pop had already shut down. I know that they shut down a New York office, which I understood to be where that particular team was headquartered. This is not surprising to me at all. It's unfortunate. It's one of those things where the OMG Pop had a hit. It was an independent company. It got acquired by Zynga. These things happened. That all sort of made sense, but the price was really high. It didn't last long, and it kind of turns into like a tragedy for all the creative people who were originally behind a company that I guess could reassemble in some sort of other form. But it's almost like you kind of booted out and started over.
Yeah, I mean, the OMG Pop has been down for a while. It was the employees were still there and they were saying, hey, Zynga, that's fine. You don't have to even sell us everything. You can keep Draw Something, keep anything you want. But if you're going to just get rid of it anyway, sell it to us. We'll pay for it and let us go off and start a venture. And it looks like Zynga really did say, you know what? No, We don't want you going out because what if you're successful and it makes us look bad? Well, guess what, Zynga? You look bad anyway. Yeah. It really didn't help not to let these guys take what they brought in that you aren't going to use anymore and go away. And the fact is, I would hope that these OMG Pop folks that got laid off do go and gather together as many of them as they can and start a new company, because that's still going to be embarrassing to Zynga if they succeed. It didn't help Zynga at all in this situation. I know Don Matrick just started over there, and he's got a long way to go to clean things up. But yeah, this doesn't help the image of Zynga. It doesn't make me believe in them anymore at all.
Yeah, Matrick said he would put his head down for 90 days and try to figure out what to do with the company. And this is one of the few things that have come out since he's taken over. Somebody called this Zynga got Matrick NATO'd in the chat room. Beatmaster, I think that might be accurate. It's just a mess. Matrick NATO'd. It is.
Matrick NATO.
It's the same problem. I mean, Sony right now is building so much good branding around the fact that it's so friendly towards creative people, towards indie game developers. And I'm not saying that's true, but nevertheless, that sort of, it's got a life of its own now. It's built momentum as a belief. And, you know, Microsoft is the exact opposite. Matrick left Microsoft, now is at Zynga. And funnily enough, the first big story to come out from Zynga is this idea that also they can't get along with talent. They can't get along with the geniuses that make games and make them feel welcome and you know, and then create rifts with them. So, you know, that's a terrible start.
All right, I want to call this next story Alibaba versus Tencent beat down in Beijing. Oh, look at that. Nice job, Anthony. Well done. We actually even got a little graphic for that. That's awesome. This is taken from a story on the Next Web, talking about things that happened in China this week. Tencent announced that WeChat has deals now with China Unicom to come on their SIM card, China Telecom for a 2 gigabytes data devoted to WeChat, and Xiaomi, the hot Chinese phone maker, for the Hengmi, which comes with Qzone. That's a Tencent company as well. They're also exploring e-commerce, $150 million investment in Fab.com, and they've integrated their TenPay payment system into WeChat. On the other hand, their competitor, Alibaba, they're the heavyweight in e-commerce over there, has suspended WeChat, saying it was a misuse by sellers, and replaced it with their own Taobao system in partnership with Weibo, Sina Weibo, which is sort of the Twitter of China. Remember, Alibaba also took an 18% stake in Sina Weibo as a hedge against Tencent. They also have a 28% stake in AutoNavi, they point out on the Next Web, which is maps, which could be used for social. I'm just fascinated with this war. It would be as if eBay were much more successful and involved in a lot more things, and they took on Facebook, but Facebook Message was the bigger player than Facebook, the social network. How is this fight different from Silicon Valley? I mean, we have these partnerships on feature phones. Facebook has them in some parts of the world, just not in the U.S. Sharif, does this entertain anyone else as much as it entertains me?
Yeah, you do seem very entertained by it. I mean, it's very exotic news, right? Part of the upside to this is just to see this kind of wrangling going on is suggestive of quite a vibrant tech scene, you know, and quite a capitalist commercial tech scene. And that's interesting and worth getting excited about. On the other hand, you know, the difference with Silicon Valley is transparency. You know, there's so much going on here behind the scenes. And, you know, these rivalries, you just can never be sure how much you really know. You know, with these huge telecoms players in China, they have huge resources. But I don't know, sometimes there's just no transparency in seeing how they act. And it's a strange market, China. It's a really opaque market.
I think it's interesting that stuff happens on the carrier level. I mean, a lot of the stuff we see in the U.S. seems to be about the manufacturers of phones, and they're entering into deals with other companies. But this is happening up top. And we've seen, you know, every now and then we see like a music company get together with an MVNO or something to offer you something special. But these deals happening up top and changing pretty much every phone that's on there, that's what I find most intriguing about this. It's not necessarily that I know these companies very well, but this, I wonder if this is a sign of what could come to the U.S. where deals would be made on the carrier level. That way, these companies aren't necessarily being thrown around by HTC or Samsung or Apple. They're just like, you know what? We're just going to go bypass you guys. We're going to go AT&T, T-Mobile, and the rest of you guys.
Yeah,
imagine an Instagram only being on a particular mobile OS? I mean, or a particular carrier. I mean, yeah, that would change things quite a bit. It wouldn't be just about, you know, how much you like your hardware. I don't know. I'm trying to wrap my head around exactly where the Chinese market goes from here. I mean, you just kind of have two big players and you divide up your sides and then the consumers have to choose which one looks the most attractive.
Well, I think there are more big players there than the story implies, maybe. But this is an interesting e-commerce. I guess Alibaba, maybe they're always comparing to eBay, but maybe they're more of an Amazon because they're in the retail segment and they're headed for a battle with Facebook. Obviously, there's still Google and Apple and lots of big players here as well. But that's the analog in this situation. And it's just a different way. We don't think of Amazon and Facebook going at each other, but these two are trying to get into each other's markets the way that Google and Apple have, you know, kind of started from different positions, but started to get into each other's market. And this would be, I think the other interesting thing is our carriers did have stuff like this, VCast and those sorts of things. And they were total failures, total non-starters. Nobody cared about those kinds of things, but they seem to be differentiators in China at this point. All right, let's move on to the randomizer. I'm going to try to read the straw poll correctly today. It looks like at this point, confused photocopiers randomly rewriting scanned documents is 63%. NASA will separate twin brothers for a year, one on Earth, one in space, to study their differences, 37%. So confused photocopiers works. A German computer scientist, David Kreisel, wrote about the problem last week. Ars Technica reports about it today. They found some Xerox scanners, which work with a compression algorithm that will recognize characters, do some optical character recognition. And so it can save data by saying, well, those are all T's. So we'll just store all of those and say it's that number of T's this many times in this place, but gets it wrong. They used some floor plans as an example here. And the floor plan numbers were wrong in the copies because the data algorithm switched them from another part of the map.
When I saw the story, I was afraid, like, is this some kind of stupid copyright scheme where, like, if somebody made a photocopy, you know who took it, the originator, like those little dots that happen on those inkjet printers and color printers to give you the origin of the printer. But the fact that the algorithm is wrong and changing numbers on invoices and everything else, that's just incredible. That it's doing that job. It's makes you think that there's a lot more behind the software, though. Got to make sure that goes right.
Yeah, it's a weird bug, and there are bugs and things, but this is a weird bug to be like, this is 2111 by 10.3, and then in the copy it says 14.1 times 8. You wouldn't think to look at that.
Yikes.
You think the copier makes the copy? That's it.
It could be 1,000 years before historians sort of use this information to make judgments about our society 1,000 years ago. And then they think all our room sizes were totally different than what they really were.
You know, people were very small back then. Let's
move on. Archives should be as dumb as possible. I think that's what we could agree on.
Yeah, you can shrink it. But I mean, do copiers really need compression algorithms? I guess maybe there's a case for it. But just truthfulness in copies is probably more important to me. Let's see what's on the calendar.
AOL and Groupon both have their earnings reports tomorrow. Also tomorrow, LG is hosting an event in New York City. Should be the G2 launch. It'll also be live streamed for anybody who wants to follow along live. SimCity for Mac users is coming on August 29th. And as I has mentioned earlier on the show, Zynga is shuttering OMG Pop's website on September 30th.
Let's see what's incoming. It's a message. This one comes from Brian O. I've been a longtime Canadian fan of the show, but the first time I've written on a holiday Monday to boot. I hope you had a great civic day. I've been listening to all the Chromecast hype over the past couple of weeks, and I'm lost to why folks are making such a big deal over this. I've even read some other media outlets claiming it's a game changer and had to laugh. About a year ago, I purchased a similar dongle while in China and have subsequently purchased additional units for all my televisions online for around $45 shipped. Each device basically turns my set into an Android device with a gig of RAM, dual-core A9 processors running at 1.6 gigahertz, 4 gigabytes of flash, full GPU support, and 2 USB ports and a micro SD slot. I pair each with a small handheld wireless mouse and keyboard. I've had all the functionality of Chromecast and much more for a long time now. So I guess my question is, why do people think these Chromecast devices are such a big deal? Because they seem very limited as compared to the tech I've had for more than a year now.
Now, as a big giant nerd who's had a computer attached to his TV since like 2003, maybe before that, trying to find out those little attachments that allow you to do that, I sympathize with Brian O to think, hey, maybe this isn't such a big deal. But I think what happened is that the company behind Chromecast, Google, is putting this out at a really low price. And the fact that they've kind of cracked this idea that you don't need to have a keyboard and mouse in your living room. They tried it with Google TV, and that was kind of ugly. People don't want to use those things in general. I know the nerds like me want to do it, and you want to do it that way, but I think it's a big deal because the masses will go, oh, it's on my phone, extra button, boom, and they got content on their TV. So that's why I think it's a big deal over those Android sticks that are still out. And yeah, you're right, you can do a lot more with them, but I don't know if everyone wants to use those.
Yeah, I think you're right. I don't have a Windows Media Center hooked up to my television anymore, even though it does a lot more than all these other devices, because it just wasn't as simple as an Apple TV or a Roku. And that's what Chromecast does. It makes it even more simple, even simpler to be correct. You're getting the Chromecast eventually, right, Sharif? I heard it's good. They haven't announced it or anything, but it's going to come to the UK.
I'm more in tune with the Reader, I've got to say. I mean, I have a HTPC connected up to my main TV. I have Raspberry Pi. Those are the things that kind of get me going. If Chrome, the browser, does crazy things like, you know, with gaming and so on, and that could translate, yeah, maybe I would pick up a Chromecast just for the sort of Google compatibility that it would bring, not for any real technical reason.
Yeah. Well, Sharif, thank you so much for joining us today. It's always great to have you on the show. And Engadget.com to find your work. Anything particular you're working on or anything you want to tell folks about?
I'm working on something to do with street photography and sort of getting inside the minds of street photographers. So I hope to have that up soon, and I hope people will take a look at Engadget.com.
Yeah, keep an eye out for it, Engadget.com. Thanks again, Sharif.
Thank you.
Don't forget to vote in our subreddit, technewstoday.reddit.com. Each and every day, people submit links. They let us know what they're interested in. It does have an effect on what we put in the show, so make your voice heard. Join them at technewstoday.reddit.com. It's R-E-D-D-I-T. Everybody knows how to spell Reddit, right? Come on. That is it for us. You can find us on the web at twit.tv/TNT. You can email us. Our email address is tnt@twit.tv. And you can give us a call. Leave us a voicemail, 260-TNT-SHOW. Eric Franklin from CNET joins us tomorrow. We'll see you then.